Blog Talk Radio.
This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. On a Tuesday night, December the 2nd, 2014, I'm Dre. My co-host Jay will be here shortly if he can get over the shame of actually trailing me for the season now. Finally, I have taken a lead on him. And Jay, I would love to gloat about finally having a lead on you for the season now. We're both under 500, unfortunately. I can't gloat too hard. But, of course, no matter what's going on in the world involving us, ISIS, Ferguson, no matter what, of course, it's all about Johnny Football.
It's sickening. That's for sure.
We knew it was going to be like this when it happened.
We knew it. I think we kind of called it. That loss that they suffered to the Bills was bad enough, and you've got to realize now that their chances of making the playoffs, even with Brian Hoyer, are pretty slim. And this is an organization that's just clamoring. They couldn't wait. They were announcing 4 or 5 weeks ago that they just couldn't wait to get Johnny Football in there. So you knew. I mean, you just knew it was going to happen. And yeah, there's a reason I've stashed him away in our Buster League all year.
He's been right there on your bench the whole time.
You're He's been on
waiting
my bench
for this moment
all year, just because I could say, "Yep, I drafted that guy in the Buster League, and I sat on him, and I'm going to probably end up looking like a pretty smart guy." Because I mean, granted, you know, the Buster League isn't the most serious thing on earth, but it's fun, and you know, and you get to feel good about being right in that, just as like you get to feel good about being right in anything. But as sickening as that was, that we just both put up was very sickening.
Oof, it's.
I mean, I mean, you got me on a couple of lucky ones there. I got the feeling like we should still be tied, and then you have Gostkowski miss the field goal that would have given me the cover with the Packers, and that just killed me. And then you have the Giants give up 2 fumble return touchdowns against the Jags in the game that they were winning 21-3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like you said, it would be easy for you to gloat, but there was really nothing for us to gloat about this last week at all. The game is – I don't think we won a game we agreed on, unless I'm missing something.
No, you're correct. We lost Washington, we lost Baltimore, we lost Cincinnati,
yeah.
We lost Pittsburgh, and we lost the Dolphins last night.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. So
0-5.
0-5 in the games that we agreed on. So we would have been better off to just keep disagreeing.
We should have split the entire week, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess we just to get – we don't really get to talk too much about the spreads and that as much as we just get to talk about what actually happened.
Yeah.
Because we didn't really know too much about what was going on in the spreads. And I will say, I deserve to be behind you after taking the Oakland Raiders. Oh, my God.
52-0.
That, you know, each year when I do the picks, not the picks, but when I do the hardware, when I give out the postseason awards for the recap.
The honors and dishonors.
Honors and dishonors. I'm so stunned I forgot what I even called them. but I give each one of us a best call and worst call of the year. And, oh, Oakland Raiders, that's got to be the worst call of the year. They lost 52-0. And, oh, my God.
You know, that whole afternoon, the early games for you on Sunday, nothing went right for you. Literally nothing.
And it was funny because there was a huge portion of those early games where things were going right for me.
Yeah.
which is what's even, you know, more frustrating, is that there were some picks that I had early that looked good, and then things just kept snowballing and getting worse. And yeah, it was really, realistically, the only ones that I won were the ones that I disagreed with you on.
Mm-hmm. Your brown fever was shutting out the Bills at halftime.
Oh, it was, well, 3-0.
A shutout is a shutout.
That's true.
So, of course, they start giving up points, and it's all Brian Hoyer's fault. We got to go to Johnny Football now.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, those
but it was 3-0.
Those interceptions he threw, I don't know if they were necessarily his fault. They both look like sort of, you know, misjudgments by the receiver or miscommunications with his receiver. You know, I understand that eventually you get to a point where there's too many communication breakdowns and you say, fuck it, we got to go, you know, in another direction. I don't know if this was – I don't know if Cleveland had drafted any other rookie quarterback, any other of the rookies, literally any of the other rookies. I don't know if this game, this point in time – with this 7-4 team battling for a playoff spot, a division title still, I don't know if that decision gets made at this point in time. I really don't.
No, I agree. But all the hype around it, the fact that they were able to sort of sneak their way, quote-unquote, into picking him as low as they did in the first round, which is funny because there were other guys that were taken higher, and he's the guy who everybody's just got to see. And all the hype is going to be about, and he came in, and he was playing in garbage time, so you can't even really assess what he did.
Well,
you know, the offense moved a little bit. He ran in a touchdown, but really he was not playing in high leverage situations towards the end of that game.
I don't know. I think he thought he was. I think he kind of plays every play like it's the last play of the Super Bowl. It's sort of his deal. I bet you he legitimately thought he was about to lead that team back to a victory.
He thought he was playing in a high leverage situation, but I'll tell you who didn't. The Buffalo Bills defense didn't think that he was playing in a high leverage situation at all. So that's great that he went out there and, you know, he gave it the old college try, I guess would be the,
so to speak,
way of saying it. Yes, no pun intended. And, yeah, that's great. Hey, good for him.
Did you see that one play where they ruled it an incomplete pass and it looked like he got obliterated and fumbled and gave up a touchdown to put the game away for Buffalo, but they went back and reviewed it and said his arm was going forward barely?
Yeah,
was
it the
incomplete pass?
The micron movement forward.
Right.
Of
yeah.
The hand, because I guess the rule now is it has to be the empty hand.
Right.
So if the arm starts
going
forward and there's no ball in it, that obviously is not a forward pass or it's an incomplete pass.
But they bailed him out by reviewing it and saying his arm was starting forward barely with the ball in his hand, so it has to be incomplete.
I remember when they had just started screwing everything up with the replay and not quite getting it right at the beginning. And I believe it was the Rams had a play in it. Let's say it was still with Kurt Warner. If we've had replay a while, would it have been back then?
Probably.
Would it have been that long ago? Because I think we did. And it was funny because he was sacked. And the arm was clearly going forward, right?
Yep.
And the ball comes out. Except, guess what? The ball went backwards.
It did.
And the refs still
this.
Ruled it an incomplete pass. And said, no, that it doesn't matter if you're throwing the ball. If the ball goes backwards, it's a fumble. And I felt like the only guy in the world, because the announcers didn't notice it, the refs didn't notice it, and I'm sitting there watching, I'm screaming at my TV, because he gets hit, and the ball pops backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, just so,
That might have been the genesis of the whole empty hand deal, that they have to spell it out now what a incomplete pass is and what is not an incomplete pass.
No, the ball has to go forwards to be an incomplete pass. But yeah, that's fine. Maybe he got the benefit of a call. I doubt he would have gotten the benefit of a call like that at Buffalo. I don't think they'd be. It's really hard to say they gave him like a star call or anything like that. But they definitely bailed him out of a really ugly, like, Geno Smith-style play.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, to mention that name. Whether they gave him a star call or not was, you know, it's debatable. But my point of bringing that play up is that is exactly the play why I would want nothing to do with Johnny Football if I were running an NFL franchise. I don't need to see that every week on my team. Because that's exactly what he's going to bring. He's going to bring excitement. He's going to bring razzle-dazzle, razzmatazz, jazz hands, whatever you want to call it. And he's going to bring, you know, a scramble for a touchdown, you know, in garbage time, as you call it. But like I said, I think he thought he was about to, you know, run off a streak of 6 touchdowns in a row, because that's the type of confidence he has in himself. And he's going to give you that. He's going to give you, oh, fuck, I'm getting, you know, ran out of the pocket and sacked, and he was like 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage when that guy finally brought him down and made him cough up the football, even though it was ruled an incomplete pass. He's going to give you that, and it's not going to go his way every time. Sometimes they're going to actually rule that a fumble, and it's going to be a soul-crushing fumble and cost your team the game. And that's not even counting, you know, the days in which the forward pass isn't going to work for him, because not every team is going to let him, you know, go down the field and throw just straight line, no patterns, no fakes. All his passes were just on a rope, on a straight line, guys running straight down the field, like not even making breaks to the outside or slants or anything like that. It was just straight up the field, down the seams, because he really didn't seem to have any other, you know, plays to make. And not every team's going to let that happen, and not every team is going to get the ball called as a forward pass, even though it looked like it was a fumble. You're going to get a lot more mistakes than great plays out of Johnny Football on the whole, in my opinion, and that's why I wouldn't want anything to do with him.
Well, we talked about this during the draft and a little bit here sporadically during the season, but the stuff that worked for him in college is not going to work for him in the pros.
Nope.
He is going to get blowed up, or worse, he's going to get one of his receivers blowed up. And yeah, I know they've got the defenseless receiver rules and blah blah blah, but if you ask any defender if you've got a chance to take a shot and knock a guy out of the game, he's taking it.
Yeah,
15 yards be damned. You know, you got a juicy target right there in front of you. You're still hitting the guy.
Yeah, all
he's
the defenseless.
Get one of his receivers just killed.
All the defenseless rules thing means is that it's less likely that your receiver gets killed by a shot to the head, and more likely that he gets killed by getting his ACL blown out from the side now.
Yeah, or his legs taken out from under him, or a shoulder in his rib cage.
Yeah, so good luck with that.
Yeah.
The big question, of course, is if Johnny Manziel goes on to stink, as I believe he will, and I think you believe he will, will Mike Pettine sometime this season reinsert Brian Hoyer?
No, I don't think he can. I don't think he can. I think once he makes the decision's final, and they're going to play this guy out, because Hoyer's not coming back.
Yeah, now, not I mean, after if, this? No, I wouldn't think so.
And I mean, if we get it to be so hypothetical that, you know, they're playing for something, you know,
They've got the record where they absolutely can be playing for something in Week 17. There's a big jumble of teams in the AFC that have that same record, but they're right there.
Yeah, but there's also a jumble of teams with that record that are probably better than they are. But there are a lot of 7-5. I mean, their entire division is 7-5 or better.
That's a good point, Jason, but you know what? Honestly, there's a lot of teams with records worse than the Browns who are better than them, so, you know. All that matters is you have the better you have the record at the time of the playoffs that gets you in. It doesn't matter if you're as good or not, because at that point, all you got to do is rack up the wins.
Realistically, there's only one team in the AFC that you could make a case for, because there's only one team in the AFC that has 6 wins. Everybody else in the AFC has 1 or 2 that's below the Cleveland Browns. And that team with that 6-6 team is the Texans. And yeah, that's a tough one, because you talk about heckle and jide. That's a pretty good case of it right there.
Yeah, in the AFC there are not that many teams that are better, but overall, and there's certainly teams in the NFC that have a worse record than Cleveland that I think are better. But my point was, you know, just get the wins and get in and go from there. It kind of doesn't matter. But as far as Coach Pettine reinserting Brian Hoyer, I wouldn't have thought that Geno Smith would have seen the field ever again for the Jets. So never say never as far as I'm concerned. Now, I understand that might not be Rex Ryan's decision, but sometimes you get in these situations where you just make these kind of snap calls in your head that the alarm bell just kind of goes off. Okay, it's time to do this. And I can actually see it. I can see Mike Pettine in week 16 or 17 when he's had enough of Johnny Manziel running around, throwing his fingers up in the air, making the money sign after, you know, gaining after gaining 6 yards on a scramble. And then turning around on the very next play and trying to scramble and getting sacked for 15 yards. I can see him having enough of that and going back to Brian Hoyer. I don't know if it's likely or not, but I can see it. But, you know, here it is. The Johnny Football apocalypse is upon us. All roads point to Johnny Football. All eyes are on Johnny Football. And now it's just, I guess, up to us to just sit back and watch the show and grab our popcorn and wait and see what happens.
Well, looking at the Cleveland schedule, you know, they had that soft middle. With Johnny Manziel, rookie quarterback, we figure he's going to be either injury-prone, maybe even accident-prone. We don't know. I don't see a win on their schedule for the rest of the season.
Wow.
Colts.
Oof.
Bengals. At Carolina, maybe at Carolina, maybe. Carolina's pretty awful. At Baltimore, and that finishes out the season for them. I don't think that game's going to mean anything, because the whole goal for them, you would think, would be to have that Week 17 game at Baltimore be a meaningful game. You know that Macy'd love to flex that one into that Sunday night spot, especially if it's with Johnny Manziel, the quarterback, so they finally get something in that slot, because they've been talking about this guy all year. He's the most talked about player, just doesn't play. I don't think their games are going to be very meaningful. Now, if the Colts go up there and Cleveland puts one on Indy with Manziel, okay, maybe. But
yeah.
You and I more this season than any other have kind of had this show me attitude with a lot of teams. Well, now he's in there, show me something.
There you go. I can't say how little regard I now have for the Carolina Panthers after what they did on Sunday. So that one I would expect, even if Johnny Football is in, is for them to get the win. And Cincinnati, how can you possibly tell from one day to the next which Bengals team is going to show up? So
yeah, there's just absolutely no way of knowing. They tried their hardest to lose to Tampa. They tried really hard.
They really did.
I mean, you were expecting things from Carolina. That was one of the ones that we disagreed on that I won, where I keep telling you that you're selling short on the Vikings, and you just keep not believing me. And
because I'm sure you saw the 2 blocked punts for touchdowns coming.
Well, yeah, I mean, the 2 special teams, I'll tell you what, even without those, they still win.
Yeah, I know. Because Cam Newton only throws for $194 off of his bye week. That's inexcusable.
Yeah, I saw most of that game. I saw a lot of that game. That was the early game that we got here. So I did get to see that Carolina-Minnesota. Carolina just does not inspire anything this year. and that no team in that NFC South does. Although the two top teams in that division pulled off surprising wins, I would say, convincing Atlanta, convincingly handling Arizona, even with Drew Stanton, who's really starting to look not ready for the moment. And then the Saints in a shootout over Pittsburgh was surprising. It was a rough week. It was really a rough week. Almost every score, you could say it was surprising. No, it wasn't surprising. It was just surprising to us because we didn't see it coming.
It had to have been surprising to one of us because the games that we were lockstep on, we lost them all.
Oh. Yeah. Carnage is the only way I can think of this last week. Nothing went well.
I'm doing the plugs now because I'm thinking about it. I'd never do it during a live show, so I'm getting them out of the way now. We have an after show after our live show for those of you live listeners who don't listen to the after show. If you want to listen to the after show, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, and we'll pop right up in there. Subscribe to the show. It's all free. It's all good. No hidden fees, at least not that we know of. If there are hidden fees, we're not getting a piece of it. Let's put it that way. Our picks are always up on the blog. Sometimes we have recaps, written recaps during the middle of the week if we have time. Our blog site is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. We are still waiting for our first feedback via email. If you want to send us an email, you send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. And you follow me on Twitter at imldre, and you follow Jason at imldjtg.
And it's only been 88 shows, by the way. This is our 88th show. Still waiting for that first troll.
Well, maybe when we get to 100, it'll happen. I don't know.
Okay. It'll be a present.
And, of course, you are listening live now on blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. Thank you for listening in, whoever you may be. There's been MVP talk. I don't usually get into MVP talk at all because I don't think it's of that much value. But there's been MVP talk about, of course, J.J. Watt down in Houston, wrecking havoc on defense, racking up the sacks, racking up the pressures, just balling out, picking up fumbles and sprinting away from people for touchdowns, and then turning around and catching touchdown passes out of the backfield down in goal line situations. Very talented. Obviously one of the best players in the league, probably the best defensive player in the league. Just an awesome player. I'm a big fan. I don't know who could have anything bad to say about J.J. Watt. As far as the MVP talk, all I'll say about that is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or go on and take this in whatever direction you want to go, isn't the MVP already locked up there in Wisconsin where you live? Isn't that done?
I was about to say, the only thing stopping J.J. Watt from winning MVP is Aaron Rodgers. It almost feels like it's done, and he keeps up the way he's going and keeps that team on the roll that they've been on, and I'm going to feel really good about my Super Bowl prediction for this year. That's not feeling so solid about it in the AFC, although Cincinnati is still in the mix. I just have really, you know, their problem isn't now. Their problem is what happens as soon as the playoffs start, because that's usually when things go south for them. But, yeah, the Patriots came in there, and Rodgers handled them. He handled them pretty good. They didn't capitalize on a lot of their red zone opportunities. If they had done that, the game would have been a blowout. I think it was... As good as he played, it was inexcusable what the Patriots did, allowing that touchdown to Jordy Nelson right before halftime. On basically like a little stutter step slant pattern that he just takes all the way across the field, diving into the end zone just barely getting the tip of the ball onto the pylon. There's three defenders right there when he caught the ball, and none of them had the right angle. Revis was covering him primarily, and Jordy Nelson showed you just how fast he was because he outran all three guys.
Well, that's who he beat was Revis. He took that – the moment he took the slant inside on Revis, the ball was there, which is, again, why Aaron Rodgers has got the MVP award sewn up.
Yeah, that was – I mean, it was uncoverable, that whole play. But you can't let – you cannot let him run a slant over the middle. It was like a video game move.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason why you've got to give it to Rodgers, because he's putting up the video game style numbers. I still believe there's some silly stat. I don't think he's thrown an interception at home this year. You can probably check me on that, but it's just ridiculous. And he only have three, is it three interceptions for the year? And I know two of those were off of deflections against the Saints in that Sunday night game. Nearly flawless football. So, J.J. Watt's a nice story. He'll win Defensive Player of the Year. He'll get a couple of MVP votes down there in Texas. But the rest of the football-watching nation that aren't idiots are going to give it to Aaron Rodgers.
It's a very long string of games at home without an interception for Aaron Rodgers. Yep. I did hear the stats somewhere on a podcast somewhere. I forgot the exact number, but it's been, I think, over a year. J.J. Watt, as far as some people talking about MVP awards, seasons in which there isn't a clear offensive MVP, you might consider J.J. Watt for MVP. This isn't one of those seasons. There's a clear offensive MVP. It's very similar to the baseball MVP award when
giving
you give
it to
a pitcher.
Right.
In years in which there isn't a clear offensive MVP, you decide that, okay, Clayton Kershaw has dominated enough, he needs to get it, or Justin Verlander, or what have you. But this is not the time to do that. What Aaron Rodgers is doing after the whole RELAX thing is just off the charts. He can't be stopped right now by anybody, I don't believe. And I'm actually looking forward to the playoffs starting for Green Bay just so I can see him against a little better competition as far as defensive goes, because New England was outclassed. Everybody, the Bears, you know, just on the list goes on and on. Everybody he's come across, he's just outclassed. He really isn't facing that hard a competition in these secondaries, but what he's doing is still incredible, just filleting everybody. And I'm actually looking forward to him getting some tougher competition. But the whole MVP talk as far as J.J. Watt goes, let's just stop it. Just please.
Well, you got to fuel the news cycle. Look, it even got a few minutes on our show.
I know.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It got a few minutes just for me to put it down like a sick dog, just to put it to sleep.
Like old Yeller, you know.
Yes, just put it down.
Take that out back and shoot it.
If we had an hour-long or several hours sports show every day, it would be even worse, because we'd have to put that down. We'd have to put down, are the Philadelphia 76ers so bad that the Kentucky college team could beat them in a seven-game series or something like that? We'd have
that
to work on putting
every
that
year,
down.
Doesn't it?
Yeah,
that
it really does.
That was like the year that the Lions didn't win a football game, and people were
Alabama can beat the Lions.
Exactly. Yeah. When in reality, it probably wouldn't even be close.
No, it'd be 100-0.
Yeah. You see this every year in spring training for baseball when a pro team goes and plays a college team. Usually ends up pretty ugly, and that you got to think that major league team is playing
not
the scrubs.
Trying.
They're not even playing their starters for more than an inning.
Right.
You know, so you've got the guys, you know, 50, 60 down the line who are going to be the first cuts in camp, and those guys usually go out and beat the college team. So, yeah, that's – yeah, I know. I was watching the bottom line last night during the game. I did not – you know, I don't keep up that much on basketball. I do follow the Bulls a little bit, but I didn't realize that the 76ers hadn't won a game.
Nope.
Wow. That's not good.
Yep. And they bring it on themselves. They're being bad on purpose, and everybody knows it. And so, you know, they sort of ask for that. But at the same time, they still would kill the Kentucky basketball team, because the Kentucky team is comprised of a few guys who are going to be pros, while the 76ers team is comprised of pros. That's it, period.
Even if you're bad, you're still in the pros.
Yes. It's still a team of professional basketball players.
And we're proving that all the time in the NFL, because you have the really bad teams. They sneak up. Very rarely does somebody not win a game. Somebody will sneak up and get a win or catch somebody on an off day. The Raiders won that game a couple of Thursday nights ago. Look, they looked great. They didn't look
they
like
were
the
inspired.
First team in football.
No.
So
they were out there just running around like they were just.
Yeah, I mean,
you said it was their Super Bowl, or I said it was their Super Bowl.
The Jets last night tried to set football back 100 years, and it almost worked.
It did.
If the Jets would have won that game, you'd be reading articles today about how Roger Goodell was probably rushed to the hospital with heart palpitations.
If you win a game,
you don't even throw.
With your quarterback going 7 of 13 for 65 yards.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not even in a rainstorm.
No. Those were Chris Wanky-like numbers.
Ah!
Back during when they were running the Wildcat.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
he
won
the
a
Panthers
few games
he was
doing
with?
That. It was with the Panthers, and they did win a couple of games doing that. I believe, was it D'Angelo Williams taking the majority of those shotgun snaps in the Wildcat?
They definitely won a game somewhere in there where Winky attempted 9 passes.
They beat Atlanta.
Oh. He attempted 9 throws the entire game, and they won.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. So. Well, we shouldn't make fun of Gino. I'll tell you what, though. For the first half, it was boring as hell. But the Dolphins had no answer for it. You know, and if you've got this team and they just refuse to throw, you know you've got that thought in the mind like, oh, wait, at some point he's going to drop one over the top, and they just wouldn't throw the ball. And then a couple of times it was like 3rd and 5 and Geno Smith tried to throw the ball. You realize why they weren't trying to throw the ball.
Yeah, it was a perfect example of what happens when you fully commit to the run, because Miami wanted to stop the run and were geared up to stop the run and had, you know, all 11 in the box to stop the run. And even when they stopped the run, the Jets stayed committed to the run and just ran again on the next play and, you know, made yardage out of it. And they just kept advancing the ball in that fashion. And they were as committed to the run as you're going to see any team in football these days. And it was pathetic and admirable at the same time, I think, is the way I would describe that.
Yeah, I mean, they knew what they were getting going into that game. They couldn't have come up with a better game plan for Geno Smith not to let him handle the ball.
Yeah, snap it and hand it off to somebody who can play, son. That's what you do tonight.
And it was, in the first half, it was interesting because it wasn't just the boring runs up the middle. They were getting, you know, wide receivers involved, and they were doing all kinds. They're doing fake one way and pitch it the other. They really had the Dolphins sort of on their heels, and you could get that sense in the second half that Miami decided in the locker room, fuck this shit. We are all in for stopping this running game. We're going to make Geno Smith beat us, and they shut them out in the second half.
It was funny to watch. The offensive coordinator for the Jets probably had a play card over there that had like one red spec for the throw on his game plan. So the card was all green for run plays. All right, we got this run, we got that run, we got off tackle, got over here off guard, we got the fake end around, we got this. All runs.
I didn't see Geno Smith up there doing a lot of audibly. You know, I didn't see a lot of kill, kill, kill. Or any of the hand gestures. It was, nope. Take the snap, turn around, give it to somebody. If it's not there, go do it again.
Don't think he has the authority to do any audibles out there. I don't think that's his, I don't think he has the right to do that. Someone who does have the right and has been making the plays all year, and still his team has been sucking. But the guy to win on Sunday was Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. You know, as I pointed out correctly, but didn't use my own advice, New Orleans is still a top dangerous passing attack. They entered the game third in the league in passing offense, and they were averaging 7.6 yards per throw. The Saints were not playing bad. Drew Brees was not playing bad. He was just making the wrong throw at the wrong time, and on Sunday he made the right throw at all the right times, and he exposed your favorite team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, as being woefully lacking in the secondary.
Yeah, one of those teams was 5-7, and the other one was 7-5, and if you just watched that game, you would have had to have figured it was the other way around. However, they still let the Steelers, you know, creep back in. Granted, their last touchdown meant absolutely nothing.
Right.
Because it was time expired, and they got the last touchdown. So at that point in the AFC, you get to, you know, you're taking a loss, you're down to 7-5. I guess they figured the points would matter.
Yeah,
I guess that's the way they had to look at it. With that being said, though, that Saints defense still got gashed all day long. So yes, they got the win, and it was a tough win on the road, but they still looked like the New Orleans Saints defense. They were awful.
And one, because the Pittsburgh cornerbacks looked like the Pittsburgh cornerbacks. They got Ike Taylor back, and they still got blown away. Ike Taylor got burnt all day by Kenny Stills. He was the new toast. It was sad. And, you know, Graham got no targets in that game was the other unbelievable thing. Zero target. They didn't even need to throw him the ball because they were destroying the cornerback so bad. They didn't need the middle of the damn field. And that's pretty much all Brees did, was up the sidelines all day, you know, to Kenny Stills and whoever else wanted a piece of the football. It was too easy. It really was. The Steelers are so disappointing to me. You didn't think they were shit to begin with, but I actually thought they were going to be in the playoffs. That's one of my playoff teams, and God, they are just terrible.
Well, let's not piss on their grave too bad. They're still 7-5.
I understand, but that's not what a 7-5 team looks like. No.
With four games left to go, they're right there in the mix. I mean, it's really a quarter of a season left, and we probably got 20 or 21 teams, realistically. It might be more because you've got a lot of 1-2 win teams in the league, and you've got a lot of teams 5-7 or better that all mathematically have chances to make the playoffs. Sadly, that whole NFC South is looking pretty good. I think Tampa we could finally say Tampa won't make the playoffs. The Saints win.
Oh, I was saying it the whole time, believe me.
Just to keep pace with Atlanta, who put on an offensive show against the Cardinals. I did not expect that much offense against that Cardinals defense. I expected a tight game. I mean, I did have Atlanta here, but they kicked a lot of field goals, a lot of short field goals. That had been, if they had been touchdowns, we could have been looking at a major blowout down in Atlanta against the Cardinals. And I think all the things we were saying about the Cardinals are starting to come true.
You said that the Cardinals have been exposed, and that's why you were going against them in this one. And they sure look exposed again against the Falcons.
They have 500 yards of offense for the Falcons against that so-called good Arizona Cardinal defense, which we've both been so complimentary of all year. Not the place to go and put up an effort like that, especially with Seattle on your heels.
Arizona's top defense, not top ranked, but one of the top defenses, very, very run defense heavy. You don't run on the Cardinals. They're third in the league going into that game in rush defense. But you can throw on them. They were 25th in pass defense, and they were giving up 7.6 4 yards per pass attempt. What they were doing were creating turnovers and making you pay in that respect. But you could throw on the Cardinals all year, and Atlanta pushed their numbers down even further with that performance. Now that great ranked Arizona defense is now 27th in the league in pass defense, and they're giving up 7.5 yards per throw. So it was there in the numbers the whole time. How to beat them? The deal is, a lot of their opponents, all of their division opponents and some of their other opponents, they can't throw the football. So, of course, their defense is going to look
That's
good
true.
Overall. When you're facing
you
Colin Kaepernick
games.
Twice,
yeah.
Russell Wilson twice, and whoever St. Louis is throwing out there twice, of course you're going to look pretty good.
Yeah, the quarterback du jour in St. Louis, I guess, would be the easiest way to go for it. But no, Atlanta... They're hanging in there. They have a tough game Monday night up here at Lambeau.
You think?
The paper, I'll tell you what, the odds makers, everything would say this is going to be a Packers blowout. Just a word of caution for all those folks not giving away a pick. Atlanta always comes up here and plays tough.
The last time they did, you were there.
The last time they did, I was here. I believe the Packers were a 2-point favorite and won by a point. And
because Aaron Rodgers obviously was injured, that's why.
No, that was one of the Matt Flynn. That was one of the Matt Flynn games. I got that weird vibe. I don't want to. That's probably not a highlight game. I don't know how many times we can go into Atlanta the first place joke, but they are still in first place. Green Bay comes off of a big win against the Patriots. You got Atlanta, ha ha ha! They're the joke of the league, 5-7, going to Atlanta. Just watch out for this one. Not saying I'm picking Atlanta in this one, but watch out. This is I don't think it's going to be the 52-10 style game that I bet you a lot of people would be expecting in this one.
We talked about all the other members of the AFC North. The Baltimore Ravens lost their game to San Diego very similar
to the paper
to the
way champions.
To the paper champions. Very similar to the way Pittsburgh lost to New Orleans, which is terrible, terrible, terrible cornerback play.
So what do we make of San Diego? Because you want to talk about teams that are hard to read? San Diego Chargers, are they the worst 8-4 team in the league? Are they the...
Well, similar to Cincinnati, this is how I see them. As their quarterback goes, so goes the team. And Phillip Rivers had not been getting it done the last few weeks, whether he was hurt or whatever the case may be. And in this game, he looked like he was back. Now, again, he was playing the Baltimore Ravens cornerbacks, so that's going to make him look very good. But he wasn't injured. He looked like he had shaken off any ill effects of whatever was ailing him the last few weeks. So that's a team, clearly, as Phillip Rivers goes, they go, because they still can't run for anything. Ryan Matthews, I think, ran for 100 yards a couple weeks ago, and I think the world stopped turning on its axis because it was such a shock. They're still terrible trying to run the ball. It's all about Phillip Rivers, and that's the only way that team does anything. But he got it done in this game. There's no doubt about it. Baltimore, if they're not going to get to the quarterback, if they're not able to rush and pressure on the quarterback, they're going to apparently just get peeled open all the time because they just can't stop anybody on the outside. Keenan Allen was just making plays all over the place. It didn't matter which side of the field. It didn't matter who was trying to cover him. He was just going to go up and get the ball and say, to hell with this.
And Keenan Allen's been absent all year. He's a ghost. He's been... You haven't seen his name filling up the stat sheet very much. He's been better of late. But, yeah, I saw that he had a good game there against the Ravens. I was like, oh, damn. Baltimore, what are they doing? They're giving it up.
Yeah. So those teams, definitely to me, Baltimore and Pittsburgh showed how to beat them. You get a decent quarterback, a decent passing attack, and they're going to rack up the yardage and the points against both of those teams, no problem. I don't feel the same way about Cincinnati and Cleveland. I think you can throw on them occasionally, but it's not like what Baltimore and Pittsburgh are giving up. I think that's might be the big difference in that division race, is those two teams are just not getting it done in the secondary at all.
No, and by virtue of the tie, would you believe right now, I know there's four games left, but the Bengals would be the number one seed in the NFC?
In the NFC, you said?
AFC. I have a sort of AFC. In the AFC. It sounded like an N coming out, but I really meant an A. Yeah, the AFC, Bengals, by virtue of the tie. So that tie is going to loom large. Everybody wants to make fun of the tie, but less loss is really going to come in big.
Well, the Pats and the Broncos are currently a half a game up on them at 9-3.
But I'm telling you, watch out for that tie.
And speaking of the Broncos, another one of your wins. Denver just manhandling the Kansas City Chiefs front seven, outclassing them. Peyton Manning got to have an off day and still, you know, get a win, get an easy win, because Kansas City couldn't stop C.J. Anderson and the Broncos from just throwing them around like rag dolls.
Yeah. Well, at least I pat myself on the back there for one, because it's Kansas City. They get to go through this. It seems like almost every year they think they're going to hang. Their record looks really good, and then they get to play the Broncos and just get shown that they're not ready to hang with the rest of the elite teams in the league. And that was a beatdown. That was the easiest way to say it. And I think that the result of the game, the score of the game, was nowhere near as close as it looked.
No, it wasn't. And you got to give Adam Gase and the Denver offense brain trust credit. They pulled a Belichick, basically. They did what New England did a couple weeks ago against Indianapolis. They looked at a team and they said, here's the best way to defeat them, even though we have an all-world, all-time quarterback, at the height of his powers. We're going to go in and destroy them on the ground, because that's the best way to get at them. The city has the number one pass defense in football. Obviously, the best way to beat them is to run it down their throats. They were giving up 5 yards per carry coming in to that game, and I think it got worse. So good on them for figuring it out, and it actually went down to 4.9. They went from 26th to 30th in run defense. So just committed to the run, just like the Jets last night. Just no matter what, committed. The most interesting to me were those attempts that Peyton Manning made when he did throw the ball. All seemed to have sort of the same flavor to it. Was he picked out a rookie cornerback and just try to float these airmail bombs over the top, try to beat him that way. And that was interesting, because I think he was looking for as much a completed pass as a pass interference call. I think he didn't care either way. It's just that when it was time to make plays through the air, he wanted to get a big chunk of yardage at once, whether it was a completed catch or PI. And that's what those balls looked like to me were intended for. They were intended for the rookie cornerback to sort of panic and make contact and get a big chunk of yards that way. But other than that, he wasn't really trying to get big chunks of yards. They were so committed to the run, and it was a great game plan. It worked out perfectly for them. And once again, the Chiefs figured out that they were not in the class as the Broncos. It's a lesson that they seemed destined to learn every single time they play.
Yeah, and the Broncos are discovering a running game here at a really nice time. This Anderson kid, this isn't like the Jonas Gray experiment where it lasts for one game and then you show up late for practice and then you're, going to be like, they're going to find Jimmy Hoffa before they find this kid playing again. It seems like it's just crazy. This Anderson, the C.J. Anderson, nice little find. It's taken them a lot of running backs before it seems like they've been able to settle on somebody here who's been a consistent performer over a few games stretch now. And, you're going into the playoffs, and that's when you want to discover a running game. Doesn't mean you have to have one all year. It's Peyton Manning was going to get you pretty far all by himself. But now that's that added element, it's that threat of that running game. You know, Peyton's not chucking it down the field like he used to. He does not have the big arm anymore. He everything he tries to throw really deep, rainbows really bad. So he's not throwing laser beams in there anymore. So having a running game, you know, loosen up that defense a little bit is going to make them even better.
Well, as far as that running game goes, it seemed to me like the beginning of the year was meant to be the Monty Ball experiment to see if he was going to be able to be as good enough of an all-around back to take the place of Knowshon Moreno. And he got his opportunity, and he dropped the ball, you know, so to speak.
Literally?
Well, figuratively. He wasn't good enough. He wasn't anywhere near good enough for Peyton Manning's offense. He still wasn't picking up blocks in the passing game the way that he should, and he wasn't running the ball very well. Then he got knocked out. Ronnie Hillman, you know, had his shot to take over. He actually looked pretty good in his stead. And the reason he went down was because of injury, and that's why C.J. Anderson got his opportunity. So to me, all of that means I don't know how good Ronnie Hillman is, and I don't know how good C.J. Anderson is. But I think the lesson that we can take out of this is definitively that however high Denver drafted Monty Ball out of Wisconsin, I think his run in Denver is about to come to an end.
Name the last really good Wisconsin running back. Wisconsin running backs are all great at college. Because they're running behind that offensive line. That is a team that churns out offensive linemen to the pros like you wouldn't believe, and these running backs all benefit from that. But you can go back through with like Brian Calhoun and Ron Dane, and I think James White is somewhere floating around third or fourth on some team's depth chart. You've got this Melvin Gordon kid up here now. You know what? He'll get drafted and he'll disappear. He'll be on the practice squad. Let's give it up on Wisconsin running backs, please. They are not they are system running backs. If you can have such a thing, that's what they are.
I was going to go with Ron Dane. I liked Ron Dane. I understand he wasn't very good, but I was still a fan.
No, Ron Dane was not very good. Ron Dane was that was the whole Thunder and Lightning. Was that him and Tiki Barber?
Him and Tiki with the Giants, yeah.
Yeah, where Tiki Barber did all the work. And then Ron Dane
thundered in for the 2-yard touchdown run.
Yeah, he vultured some touchdowns. He did the Jerome Bettis at the waning stages of Bettis' career, where he's just a touchdown vulture.
Yeah,
but yeah, don't draft a Wisconsin running back high. Don't fall in love with those rushing stats. There's my breakdown right there. There's my advice to all you NFL execs who listen to this show. just take a word from me. Don't draft a Wisconsin running back in the first round. If you do, you're an idiot.
A couple of random nuggets left over from week 13. What the fuck got into Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I guess he needed the time away.
He comes back with
six touchdown
throws?
Well, he was also playing the Redskins.
No, he was playing the Titans.
Oh,
Andrew Luck
was playing the Redskins. Well, I was looking at the wrong score. He was playing the Titans. Those two are pretty interchangeable.
Those are extremely similar scores, so it's easy to get confused.
That's right. Well, I was like, it's really tiny on my computer screen here.
Houston 45-21 over Tennessee. And
yeah,
Indianapolis 49-27 over Washington.
Yeah, he had a nice game. Good for him against a bad opponent. Another one of those ugly results that shows I don't know anything about what I was doing this last week and that I deserve to be losing for the season now.
J.J. Watt got to knock out Zach Mettenberger in that game in addition to catching a touchdown. So I know he had to be happy. You know, Watt, Mr. Selfie Police, you know, cracking down on Mettenberger figuratively before the first game for taking selfies, and now he got to crack down on them literally, so I'm sure he was very proud of himself. And of course,
we actually got to have a Jake Locker sighting in that game. Oh. And that went about as well as predicted as it could have.
Exactly.
Gone.
And of course, Indy rebounding from their poor performance against Jacksonville last week, and they put up 49 on the Redskins. We were kind of right about, you know, the professional quarterback with Washington, get Colt McCoy in there, get an actual pro in there. We just forgot about how terrible Jim Haslett's defense is. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, the Washington Redskins, 425 yards of offense, that's not bad.
No. No, not at all.
Let me see here. Colt McCoy, 31 of 47 for 392 yards. Three touchdowns, and he was clean. Awesome game, except for that Andrew Luck guy on the other side. Did him even better. Well, there you have it.
Luck didn't even have to be that good because his throws, it was almost, you know, Aaron Rodgers against the Bears. Like, just he threw it to his receiver who was completely uncovered. The DB is looking back going, what, huh? What? Just receiver after receiver streaking down the field for the Colts, whether it was T.Y. Hilton or what was the kid, Moncrief.
Yeah, if you knew who the hell Dante Moncrief was, good for you.
Well,
it's like if he walked in the room right now and said hi.
If you didn't know before the game, now you do.
Dante Moncrief, I'd be like, who the fuck are you? Get out of my house.
Dante Moncrief.
Yeah, get out of my house. I'm calling the cops.
Two of the Thanksgiving Day games, your two losers, actually, the Bears and the Lions, and not the Lions, but the Bears and the Cowboys, get a week of rest and get to meet up on Thursday Night Football. So we'll take a look at that now. The Cowboys, the 8-4 Cowboys, as I rearranged my paperwork here, they're 5-0 on the road this year. I was not aware that they were that successful on the road. And the Bears, of course, have their struggles at home. They're 2-3 at home and 5-7 overall. They started out 0-3 at home. So those two wins they had before the Lions, congratulations, guys. They still count. You still get credit for them. Very impressive or not. Public was not impressed by that. They still believe in the Cowboys. Dallas is a 3.5-point road favorite at Soldier Field at the Bears. Jason, what you got?
Yeah, I'd like to tell you that I'm going to pull out the bear whispering and do all of that, but I think the Cowboys are desperate enough here after losing as badly as they did to the Eagles, that offense is going to be able to do enough damage to your favorite defense, the Mel Tucker run Bears defense. Even on a short week, I think that the Cowboys are going to be able to open up enough holes in that Bears defensive line, and then Tony Romo is going to be able to get to work on that secondary, that they will win this game, I would say, by 10. This feels like a 31-21 type game to me. So I'm going with the Cowboys.
Remember back to last season, week 14, we used to talk about the Cowboys and the Lions when the calendar turned to December. What do these teams do?
They
gag it up. Week 14 on a Monday night last season at Soldier Field, Josh McCown and the Chicago Bears 45, the Dallas Cowboys 28. Stunning of a result as you can think of, considering the different directions that those entities have taken since then. Josh McCown and the Bears and the Cowboys, and how good the Cowboys have looked this year, how awful the Bears have looked this year. You probably wouldn't have expected that based on that result from last year. I know I didn't, because I had the Bears making the playoffs this season and the Cowboys not. And that definitely looks like it's going to go in the reverse direction. I really was tempted to go with the Bears based on all of that. It's December, Cowboys. Bears handled them easily last year with the inferior quarterback. Here's the problem. That better quarterback in Jay Cutler has been neutered. He doesn't have any balls anymore. His coach, Mark Trestman, has him throwing five-yard dink and dunks, and they're so not committed to the run at all. They're not trying to balance their offense at all, and they're just throwing short passes with Cutler because they're so afraid of him throwing interceptions. They don't want him going downfield at all anymore, and that's pretty much taking what Jay Cutler does best away from him. He's got a great arm, and if you're not going to let him use it because he happens to get picked every now and then you're completely neutering him. You're taking away what he does best. I'm going with the Cowboys. They don't know what they're doing right now in Chicago, unfortunately, and I'm going to have to take Dallas, and plus Alshon Jeffrey has a hamstring, and that's kind of worrisome. Come back with the after show after this music. And now into our VIP after show portion of our program.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's the thing with the Bears that really is weird to me when I watch that team versus what you saw from them last year, was that you have Cutler, you have this big arm quarterback with like 8 foot tall wide receivers all over the field.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeffrey, Bennett, and Marshall are huge guys. They're tall, they're long, and last year, the whole offense, even when McClown was in there, the whole Bears offense was just put it up and let those guys go get it and make a play. And then that happened, and everybody's like, oh, trust, he's a genius. Well, where are those plays? Where are those deep sideline routes where he's just lobbing it up there, looking for the big play from the guy, because you have trust that your big receiver is going to go get the ball? They are not even trying those plays. I was expecting to see that in that Thanksgiving game, especially after they got up pretty big early against the Lions. This is when you go for the kill shots. This is when you start throwing it deep on them, getting some pass interference, letting your big receiver go up there and make the circus catch. Alshon Jeffrey was the circus catch guy last year. I mean, every guy that got thrown up there, he was just going up, and it seemed like he was coming down with the ball, and the DBs are just flailing. And I don't see that all from them right now.
I can't imagine that Trestman isn't calling the same plays for Cutler that he called for McCrown last year when he had all of his success. The difference is, McCrown was not making the just murderous, you know, stab you in the heart mistakes and interceptions that Cutler makes, you know, every now and then. And I think that Trestman has panicked a little bit with the adversity that the Bears had, where I thought they had quit on themselves because that's how bad they were looking. And I think this is his decision. This is his solution to the problem, is to, like I said, neuter Jay Cutler, or spay him, whichever one it is. I think neuter is for the women. You take their ovaries. Spay is what you do to the guys when you cut their nuts off.
You had that backwards.
Oh, I had it right the first time?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. But yeah, he's got him, you know, making throws to Matt Forte out of the backfield. More, you know, Forte is going to have more catches for a running back out of the backfield this year than any other running back in football by a wide margin. And I just don't think that's the way to go. I think if you balance your offense more, then I don't think there's going to be as many defenders back there to pick off Jay Cutler as there have been. I think it works hand in hand. I think Cutler makes the mistake every now and then, because that's what he does. He's going to do that, but I think to just completely neuter him like this is just the wrong way to go. I don't think that that's solving the problem at all. I think that's sort of a panic move by Trestman because he was feeling such heat from, you know, the media and from the fans, from everybody coming down this season. I don't like it at all, and I don't know why that would change in this game against the Cowboys. I think this is the path that Trestman has decided that they should be on, and that where they're going to stay. And I think that's a terrible decision, because this is a good opportunity to get an upset win tomorrow on Thursday night against the Cowboys team that I think is actually starting their backslide now that they usually start. I don't think that defense is nearly as good as it had been the first half of the year. I think they're starting to play down to their level, and I think the Bears could take advantage of that and get a big win if they had the right game plan in mind, but I don't think they do.
Well, yeah, the Cowboys, they didn't even show up on Thanksgiving.
No.
That was pathetic to watch. I mean, none of those Thanksgiving games were particularly watchable, but that one was really bad. Yeah, and you look at you got the Bears here. We get them twice in prime time. You can gag on that in back-to-back weeks.
Better than the Jets.
Well, and then and then their last two games are division games, and there is no easy win in this division right now. So they got the Lions, and then they go at Minnesota. Now their next three games are at home. So if they're gonna stand up at all, they're gonna have to do it in this three game stretch. Win two out of these three. Try to go to Minnesota and get a win. Finish your season 8-8. That's about the best I can see for these guys.
Their coach is going to have to take the testicles off of their quarterback if they're going to stand up and do anything. I think that's the most important thing that they have going for them, and I don't see that happening anytime soon, unfortunately.
Yeah, and people are starting to get a little antsy. They fired a coach who was 10-6. Now, granted, they gagged at the end of that season. Were they 9-1? Or what was it that year?
Oh, yeah, it was something pretty big, yeah.
Because it was enough to the point where you gagged. You don't gag your way to 10-6 very often, but they did. They found
they
a way
did.
To do it. So Lovey gets fired. They bring in Trestman. Last year, he kind of gets a pass because, the star quarterback gets hurt. The backup looks good, so he's this quarterback whisperer. And now this year, expectations were high, and it just hasn't gone according to plan. What do you do? It's tough. They're losing some bad games. They're not just losing games. They're looking really bad doing it too.
7-1 in week 10, the Bears were back in 2012 before losing to Houston. And then that Monday night game against Colin Kaepernick happened. And I don't know if they've recovered from that still yet. That's how bad that was. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, the 49ers are over it.
That thing is a complete mess between the coach, the quarterback, the whole organization.
Yeah.
They're tweeting each other, and the daughters, the GM is tweeting that, we don't need you anymore, tweeting at the personnel guy or something like that. It's getting ugly there. It's getting almost as bad as up in Washington. Anytime Jay Gruden talks about RG3, you can sort of hear the daggers coming through his voice aimed at RG3. He clearly doesn't like him. So there's some toxic situations in the NFL. At least it's entertaining.
Yeah, it's just it's a weird week for me because it was such a bad week picking games. You just can't help but have the hangover. You're so unsure. Really rough week. Rough week.
Yeah, that the 4-12 is waiting for me somewhere around the corner. It happens to both of us somewhere during the season. I just hope it doesn't happen this very week, and then I give the lead right back to you because I don't know if I can handle the emotional roller coaster.
Oh, so just as long as you don't hang on to this for another 88 shows like I hung on to the lead from the first show. Just saying. Hopefully it doesn't last that long.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome for me if it did.
Yeah, I didn't even get to ask you how it felt to be in the lead for the first time since the Ravens won the Super Bowl.
Oh, jeez. How long ago was that?
That was two seasons ago.
Ray Lewis was still playing. That was the power outage game. It was.
That was your last time winning because you had the honors going into that game. I needed you to make the wrong pick, and you made the right pick in that one. And that was the last time last time you had a lead. So it's been a while. You've earned it.
We did not have a podcast yet at that point.
We did not. So
how long ago that was?
That's why we always reference the fact for people who've only listened to our show, they think you're really bad at this, probably. But I'm kidding.
Hey, I'm here now. I'm I'm still under 500, but I'm only a game under.
You're two games up on me. If we translated this into points for the playoffs, it would be nothing. So right now I just have to keep it close.
And I don't want you to feel worse, but I have to point out that our Yahoo guy, he's now ahead of both of us. He went 8-8 this week. So
it's okay. It can happen. I felt, like I said, there were two games I thought I kind of got hosed on there and would have made it a little bit better for me, taking a little bit of the sting out. But, of course, those were only head-to-head games against you because we had no clue in those games that we agreed on, which we had been so good on this year.
Uncharacteristically good. We pointed that out, that we're usually, not very good at all in the games that we agree on, but this year it really turned in our favor.
And yeah, well, all up until now. Because, when things even out, they don't even out gently. this is how they even out. This is how this picking every game against, this is how it gets even with you. It is very cruel.
It is. The trap shuts very hard.
That's right. Even in games where we clearly had the winners, they didn't cover.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. I saw a picture of your Christmas tree. Very pretty.
Well, thank you. That was all my wife. I had
your
nothing
wife
to do with it.
Well, it's okay, because I saw the post from your wife, and I was going to send back some remark like, wow, you and Andre did a really nice job putting up the tree, or looks like you had some help putting that up, something. Yeah, because, of course, I have the inside information to know that that would not be the truth.
And I wonder how she would have responded to that.
Well, if she listens to our show, she would know where that came from.
I doubt she listens to the show.
That's okay. My wife doesn't listen to our show either.
I think our wives have more important things to do than to us ramble for 2 hours at a time.
Yes. Right now the thing is sleep, I'm assuming.
Right.
For my wife. Probably something I should be doing, but I'm not.
Definitely something I should be doing with all stupid overtime in my job, which is still continuing.
Yeah, well, I'm still wiped out coming off of the weekend here.
Black Friday weekend.
You just log so many hours, it's not like it's that many more hours than you're used to working. It's a lot of hours in a short period, but it's so, you're constantly on the go. You have no time to collect your thoughts or relax because you're busy, and that's good. As a salesperson, you want to be busy, but it does take a toll.
Sure, and I understand it.
So I definitely feel off my game tonight, but some of that's also a function of how crappy I did this week.
Did you have anything else for the after show? I really didn't have any or any time to put anything together.
No, I really didn't have any. This could be a short one because I really don't have any topics. I'm not feeling particularly insightful on anything right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of how I'm feeling.
I'm saving it for Thursday because Thursday we get to make the picks during the game.
That's right.
So we get to hear you in misery, Mr. Bears fan, because the one time we picked when my team was playing, they put a whooping on Tampa.
Yeah, that was a no contest.
Yeah, that was amusing. Every time I'd come up with a score update, oh, it's 56-0. Yeah,
the Falcons have scored again.
Yeah, I mean it's just that the only thing that stopped that game from ending with a death was the clock stopped. They would have literally run Tampa Bay so ragged their players would have just started dying.
Literally. Well, Bears may be dropping dead on the field on Thursday if DeMarco Murray has his way and runs for whatever he could possibly run for. I didn't even mention this while making the pick, of course, because I'm, you know, we're right up against the clock as we make the pick, as we always
Wait
are.
Wait a minute. You gave us 4 minutes for that pick tonight, which is 3 minutes and 15 seconds more than you usually do.
Well, then I just forgot to click over and read my recap from this game last year, the Bears' 45-28 win over the Cowboys. And I read that DeMarco Murray ran for 19 yards on the first play from scrimmage and 52 yards on the opening drive. And then Des Bryant scored a touchdown and made it 7-0. And Murray finished the game with only 146 yards rushing. And I thought that was pretty much where it went wrong for Dallas, is they didn't stay committed to the run. And that's pretty much has been their hallmark under their head coach, yeah, Jason Garrett. And I think that's turned around this year. I think they're going to commit to the run on Thursday night, and I think DeMarco Murray is going to keep running. I don't think he's going to go for 146 yards. I think he might go for 180 yards. I don't think they're going to take their foot off this time at all.
They have to commit to the run. It's a short week, and you go into these Thursday night games, you don't get a lot of time to scheme. You got to keep it simple. They're going on the road, primetime game. What's the easiest thing to do? Blow open holes in the Bears' defensive line and let DeMarco Murray run through that secondary. That's the easiest thing to do. You don't have to do a lot of practicing. You don't have to do a lot of scheme, game planning. Just come out there and do a lot of that. Freeze up everything for Tony Romo. That's why I think this is, I think, doesn't mean much after the week that I just had, but I think that spells a pretty easy win for Dallas.
It's a regular week for both teams. They both get the full week, having played on Thanksgiving, so that should give Dallas enough time to, you know, correctly scheme and plan and do what they need to do. And the Bears should have that same time, except they've cut their quarterback's nuts off. So there's no scheming to be done there. Unless they're going to open it back up and let Cutler do what he does, I don't see how the Bears can compete in this game. I really don't.
Yeah, and Dallas is playing for more. They really are. That was a tough loss against the Eagles. It's a really tough loss that they had there. So they need this one to keep pace. That NFC, those two wild card spots are going to be really, really valuable, considering how good the Lions have been. With Seattle moving up and Arizona seemingly moving down, you've got to figure both of those teams could end up eating up a playoff spot. The South is only going to produce one team, obviously.
Right.
So it's really going to be, I think, Detroit and Dallas coming down to that last playoff spot in the NFC. Because I really do, I think Arizona, Seattle, both are going to get in. And I San Francisco, to me, is too hit and miss. The talking heads are all still trying to prognosticate that they think that the 49ers have a chance. I think that the 49ers are done. I mean, I could be an idiot, but I don't see it.
San Francisco is 7-5 and a point differential minus 13 on the year.
Yeah.
And I will now quickly try to scan and find another team with a winning record that has minus point differential on the season. I don't think I'm going to find any others.
Cleveland. Oh, no, Cleveland actually
nope,
has a positive one. That whole division is positive.
Still, even with the Cleveland loss. They're plus 7. Yeah, every team with a winning record is plus in point differential. Even Houston with a 6-6 record is plus 40. So
yeah, and New Orleans at 5-7 is plus 5.
There you go.
And Atlanta at 5-7 is only minus 8. So both of those teams have a better differential than the San Francisco 49ers. They both have two less losses.
So differential, as we've talked about, not the be-all, end-all stat, but sometimes very telling.
Well, you know, scoring more points than the other team is essential.
Did you auditioning for Tim McCarver's job? I think that's been taken
that's right.
already.
You score more points than the other team, you win. You swing at the ball three times and miss, you're out.
You don't say.
Yeah, is that pretty good?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That was Tim McCarver made a living off of that.
Homespun wisdom from a complete numbskull. Gotta love it. All right, you talked about how you should be getting some sleep like your wife. I know I should be from all the working that I'm done, so we call it a show here.
Sounds good to me, because we get to do this again in 2 days.
That's right. So, 9 p.m. Central, or do you need 9:30 that night? Or?
No, Thursday, 9 o'clock is fine.
There you go. Works Thursday night, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, will be all of our picks for Week 14 coming up in the NFL. In case you didn't hear our last show, we have to do Thursday night because we're both occupied Friday and Saturday night. So that's what we've decided on, was Thursday night for all of our picks. Hopefully no huge news occurs over the weekend, or else we might have to jump on the blog or on Twitter and change our picks. But
no, I'll just change my pick on Monday.
You can't do that. You don't work for Yahoo.
Oh, damn it.
At least I don't think you do, unless you've been employed by them all this time.
I'm moonlighting.
Ah. Gotta make that extra money for those extra couple of kids you got there.
That's right. Kids ain't cheap. Baby needs a new pair of shoes.
There you go. All right. He's Jay. I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back live Thursday, 9 p.m. Central.